Harvey Araton, welcome to the Bookshelf Conversations.
Nice to be here with you, Ron.
Actually, this is a repeat performance because we had one of these, although with less technological advances, 12 years ago when the book came out. So I like to revisit these things once in a while. Let's talk about Driving Mr. Yogi, Yogi Berra, Ron Guidry, and Baseball's Greatest Gift. What was the impetus for this book?
It actually came out of a story I did for the Times on the same subject about the relationship between Yogi and Ron Guidry. A friend of mine who was the director of the Berra Museum on the campus of Montclair State University, Dave Kaplan, it all came out of my 14-year-old black Labrador passing away in, I want to say it was February of 2011. And Dave and his wife, being dog lovers, knew how painful that can be. So they took my wife and I out to dinner on I remember it was a Sunday night. And during the course of the conversation, I had mentioned to Dave that I was heading down to spring training for the Times the following week, heading toward the Yankee camp in Tampa. And I asked him, just making conversation, when is Yogi going down? And at this point in Yogi's life, he was starting to fail. I mean, he was in his mid-80s, and he had fallen a couple of times. He had missed an old-timers day at the stadium, missed a Cooperstown induction, which he always loved going to. So I was just curious, and he saw, oh, Yogi's going down the week after you. And I said, well, who looks after him down there? Does Carmen go with him? And he said, no, it's kind of an interesting thing. Ron Guidry has this relationship with Yogi where he picks him up at the airport and he makes sure he gets into his hotel okay, and they go out to dinner most nights, and he looks after him at the ballpark. And I didn't think anything of it, to be honest with you, Ron. But driving home, it suddenly, it was like one of these epiphanies where I was thinking, well, spring training, a pitcher, Guidry, a catcher, Yogi. What a cool spring training story that would be to talk about this relationship. So over the next couple of days, I went up to the museum and I talked to Yogi, and then I called Carmen and I asked her about Guidry, and she was, she was effusive in her praise. And I got down to spring training and I waited. I knew Guidry a little bit, but not that well. And I waited for him outside the coach's dressing area in Steinbrenner, at that point, I think it was called Legends Field. And Guidry came out and I told him, what I had in mind, and, that, I'd heard that, about this relationship, and he kind of stopped me and said, no, well, that's personal. That's between Yogi and myself. And I think from his stand, well, Ron's a pretty private person, and from his point of view, he didn't want people to think that he was, looking for publicity and, looking for praise, that look what I do for Yogi Berra. He loved the man. And so he kind of stonewalled me until I said, well, I live in Montclair where Yogi lives, and my kids kind of grew up at his museum with a lot of school trips. And I talked to Yogi and Carmen this past week, and they're both, and he said, oh, well, if Yogi and Carmen talked about it, I'm fine with that. And I guess he assumed that I was going to write the story through Yogi and Carmen. So as long as they were on board, he was fine with it. And for the next 45 minutes, he regaled me with these wonderful stories about their relationship and how they interact in Florida, and telling me about how he would try to get Yogi involved in dealing with the players. In particular, I remember one Jason Giambi story where Yogi had some advice for him on a swing. He was pulling off the ball, and then Giambi ripped a double into the gap, and he was pointing to the dugout, and Guidry was elbowing, Yogi, Yogi, he's pointing to you. And we went from there. And when the editors at the time saw the story, and again, it was a perfect timing for a story like that at the outset of spring training, they put it on A1 of the newspaper. And the funny thing was that I asked Dave for Yogi's flight information because I knew Guidry would be waiting for him at the airport. And we arranged to have a photographer waiting for Yogi to fly in, to come in. And the photographer was waiting there, and we got this wonderful photo of Yogi and Guidry heading toward Guidry's car with Ron carrying Yogi's bags. One of them actually had a Yankee insignia on it. And Yogi's looking pretty amused by the whole thing, but Ron has this grim look on his face, like he didn't expect the photographer to be there. He had agreed to do the story, but now he's got this guy shooting photos in his face, heading toward the car. But it wound up on the front page of the Times, and from there it was a free-for-all. We actually had an auction. We had so many publishers. I mean, Yogi is a magical name in American sports and culture entertainment industry. And when they read this really sweet story about this relationship and about, I mean, Guidry even wore a cap that they had made for him from the museum that said "Driving Mr. Yogi." It was, and so we had several publishers bidding for the book. Within a week, we had a deal, and we went from there. And the book was kind of it was, I don't want to call it a rush job, but it was an accelerated project because the publisher, which was Houghton Mifflin Press, was determined to get the book out for the following spring training. And they also wanted Yogi and Ron to help promote the book. So, it was, I remember, I think we agreed to do the deal, the book in like late May of 2011. And by November of that year, the first draft was actually completed. I mean, I remember working every day. I had no summer vacation that year. Every day, and I was still working for the Times full time. Every day I would get up at like 6 a.m., go down, get my coffee, climb back up to my office in my home, and start, writing for the day. The reporting wasn't, I spent a few days in Louisiana with Ron through the report, but otherwise the reporting was all local. I mean, it was Yogi's family in and around Montclair, and going to the stadium and talking to people like Joe Girardi and Joe Torre. And, Old Timers Day was a great benefit because you had guys like Stump Merrill who had worked with Yogi. So that part of it wasn't terribly difficult. But it was an accelerated project, but just one that I found great joy in doing because it really opened a window into Yogi's late life, and it I think it portrayed him in ways that hadn't been done before. The sort of the human side of Yogi. I mean, we all knew about his malapropisms and his career and his return to the Yankees after the 14-year absence. But this really was a window into not only the aging, older Yogi Berra, but the very human side of him in his, close interactions with people like Ron Guidry.
One of the things that I noticed in rereading the book more than a decade after it came out, the farther into it I got, the sadder I became because you talk about Berra's decline and also Steinbrenner. George Steinbrenner was that was a very sad part of the book. And of course, the relationship they had was a contentious one. It was mended to the gratitude of pretty much everybody involved. One of the key words that pops up into my mind is respect. Respect for Yogi, the respect Yogi had for the Yankees, despite his relationship with Steinbrenner. Talk about that a little bit, please.
Well, yeah, I mean, Yogi, one of the things that struck me as once we agreed to do the book Was that one of the track the things that attracted me to the project was that relationship between Berra and Steinbrenner. And because I also happened to have been at the museum the night that George came to the museum to apologize to Yogi. And so I think one of the most one of the most interesting chapters in the book, and one that I enjoyed reporting the most, was the recreation of that night. It was Susan Waldman, the great broadcaster, who really was most responsible for it occurring in the first place. It was kind of her idea, and she broached it with George first. And somehow, he was at first reluctant. I think he was a little scared. Yogi was a great man. Whatever you say about Yogi, he was a man of tremendous principle. Just that whole 14-year self-imposed exile was pretty amazing, especially in this era of such some often shameless self-promotion, right? Yogi just said, "No, I said I wouldn't go back, and I'm not going back. I don't care, as long as that man owns the team." But Susan talked him into it, and to this day, again, I was at the museum the night reporting for the Times. Dave Kaplan had tipped me off about it, and to this day, I kind of have. I think George did the right thing. Let me just state that first unequivocally. But also, I think George was a really astute businessman, and you have to remember that by 1999. Joe DiMaggio, I'm not, Mickey Mantle was definitely gone. And I think Joe DiMaggio, I think he might have been gone by then too, but he certainly was not, around. And, Yogi was, pretty much the most visible, popular, and greatest, living Yankee. If Joe was still around, that Yogi was still able to, be around the ballpark if he did end his self-imposed exile. So I think George wanted to do the right thing by Yogi. I think he really wanted him to come back. But I also think he realized, it was good for Yankee business to have Yogi back at the stadium. And sure enough, when he did come back, and they had a day for him. They wound up with David Cohn pitching a perfect game. Have Yogi at old-timers days and, at spring training as a special guest instructor and all the benefits of that came with that, reporters wanting to speak with Yogi. I think it was a great benefit to the Yankees, to Steinbrenner, to the family business. And also once, I think it was Dale Berra who went to Yogi, who initially kind of scoffed at the idea. He thought it was kind of going to be like sort of a self-serving Steinbrenner, promotion. But Dale went to him and I remember he told me, "Dad, you can't milk this anymore. Enough time has passed. George is making an offer. He wants to come all the way up here from Tampa to apologize." I remember just calling people like Susan about how she, approached George about it. And I remember her telling me that he didn't say yes right away, but that he also didn't hang up on me. And if he didn't want it to do it, and if it was going to be out of the question, that's what he would have done. He would have said no way and hung up. But he didn't, which gave her the sense that this could happen. And then once Yogi was on board, once Dale and I think his other sons, had convinced him and Carmen, it was the right thing to do to give George a chance to apologize. I remember talking to Rick Cerrone, who was doing PR for the Yankees at the time, and he came up from Tampa with George and rode in the taxi with him and said he had never seen George so quiet in the buildup to anything. And he knew he was really nervous. And they got stuck in traffic on the Garden State Parkway, and he was a little late, and Yogi was a very punctual man, and he was waiting outside the back door, and the limousine drove up, and Yogi waited, and George walked up and said, "Hello, Yogi." And Yogi looked at his watch and said, "You're late, you're late." And George said, "Traffic, Yogi, it's New Jersey." And they went inside and they all went into a private room with Carmen. Yogi insisted that Carmen be in the room. And George said to him, "Yogi," I put his hands on his shoulders and said, "Yogi, I'm terribly sorry. It was the worst mistake I've ever made as the owner of the New York Yankees." And then Yogi kind of said in his own Yogi-esque way, "I've made some mistakes too." They shook hands, they embraced. Yogi gave him a tour of the museum. And Yogi didn't commit that night to going back. He let George, he let George, just kind of sit there for a couple of days. But we knew that it was over because when George left the building, Yogi turned around and he said, "It's over." In sort of tribute to his own, "It's not over till it's over," memorable line, and it went from there. But it was something that benefited everyone, and I was felt very privileged to kind of tell the story of Yogi's return through the relationship. It's someone I grew up watching as a young boy. In my earliest years watching baseball, Yogi still playing for the Yankees, the 1960 World Series, all of that. And then, of course, as a manager and a coach. And then, of course, moving to Montclair, New Jersey, just, Yogi's town. I mean, seeing him around just as a sort of a regular guy. I remember my father-in-law coming down from Connecticut to visit us when my sons were young. And it just happened to be the day of one of the Booktoberfest in one of our parks, and we were walking around, and my father-in-law stopped short, and he grew up in Queens, but he was a Yankees fan, and he said, "Oh my God, is that Yogi Berra?" And I said, "Yeah, it is." And he said, "He lives here." "Oh, that's right, he lives here." And I said, "Why don't you go over and say hello to him? It's like." He's like anybody else in Montclair. Yes, he is our, greatest living celebrity, but he's incredibly approachable. And he went over and he had a 10-minute conversation with him. And he was my father-in-law, who was a Yale-educated lawyer, was like a little boy. I mean, he loved it, So for me, it was a great privilege and one of the highlights of my career to be able to do that book.
Want to ask about the title of the book. Obviously, Driving Mr. Yogi is a given. Yogi Berra on Guidry is a given. What is baseball's greatest gift to you?
I think it's the sport, all sports have become so much about money and celebrity. Contracts are to most working people almost unfathomable. We see it in so many different ways. Now gambling has become such an integral part of professional sports. You can't watch anything without, the odds of the Yankees scoring three runs in the fifth inning, all of it, And I think to view sport through the lens of love and friendship is something that maybe years and years ago we kind of took for granted that grown men were playing. Well, we always use that line, right? They're getting paid to play a kid's game. Well, we like to believe that at its core level, sports is about teamwork and friendship and about the common bonds that connect us. And I think a lot of that, has been lost. I mean, one of the sports I covered a lot during my long career was professional basketball. And when we particularly in that sport, but also in baseball, in football, so much of the coverage focuses now on salary caps and, how this team is above the cap and below the cap. And in the NBA, they have, in the last collective bargaining, they have this system, which I really don't understand anymore because I don't have to understand it. I'm not working full time. But they talk about aprons. They exceeded the third apron. Oh my God, it's the end of the world. And so much of it has become cold and clinical. And so it's harder to be a sports fan now and connect to it in ways that I think endear us just to the human quality, the human element, which is friendship. And so I think so many people who read the book said to me, somebody gave this book to me, and I said, I'm not a baseball fan. They said, you don't have to be a baseball fan to enjoy this book. Now, there may be some aspects to it when we talk about Yogi's career or whatever, recounting the whatever World Series that he played in. But at its core, it's a very human story about generational bonding and how the relationship began with Guidry, Yogi kind of looking after Guidry when he was a young pitcher. Their dressing stalls were close by in the old Yankee Stadium clubhouse. And Yogi intuitively understood what a nightmare it could be in those days to be a young pitcher coming up in the Steinbrenner organization. It was like, the old story, the Jim Beattie's of the world. He spit the bit, or whatever it was he said about him, after he got shelled at Fenway Park. You could be a young, promising pitcher, one day, and then a week and a half later, the trap door opens and you wound up in Columbus, never to return. So, like any young pitcher, Guidry had his struggles about, his command of his slider, and all of that stuff. And Yogi kind of took him under his wing, and Guidry never forgot that. So when Yogi showed up after the self-imposed 14-year exile, what we have to remember is that the Yankees had switched from Fort Lauderdale to Tampa. So the environment was completely different. When Yogi returned, he didn't know where to go. He didn't know where to go out to dinner. He didn't know where the hotel was. He was unfamiliar with the ballpark, all of that. And Guidry, thinking back to what all the times Yogi cared for him as a young pitcher, repaid that in spades. And I think more than any member of Yogi's family, and he has three sons, Guidry became that, like, almost like surrogate son to him. And it sounds cold to call him a caretaker. But those years, particularly as Yogi got into his 80s, that's what he was. And there was nothing that Guidry wouldn't have done for Yogi during those, whether it was, come up to New Jersey for his golf tournament, spend night after night, with him in Tampa. They had a starting five of rotating restaurants they would go to. Tuesday was the fish place, Wednesday was the beef place. And it was just a beautiful relationship. And I think that's what the meaning of baseball's greatest gift, a kid's game, where close friends not only bond, but take care of one another.
After Barra passed, which was a couple of years after this book came out, did it make you think of anything you might have done differently in this book? And especially looking back now, after so much time has passed, when you look back at this, do you think, maybe I should have added this, or maybe I shouldn't have put that in? That's a writer's question.
Yeah, and it's an interesting one because when the project was first proposed, the publisher, they had done a book, Houghton Mifflin had done a book with Magic Johnson and Larry Bird. And it was written by Jackie McMullen, who, very well known sports writer and columnist for the Boston Globe and ESPN. And the book was the book was the way that it was structured. It said by Magic Johnson, Larry Bird with Jackie McMullen. So It was really their story written by her. And I felt, well, number one, so that's what they had in mind for this book by Ron Guidry and by Yogi Berra and Ron Guidry with Harvey Ayrton. And number one, the New York Times has a rule against its reporters writing co-authored books with people they have written about in the newspaper or might potentially write about again. And of course, Yogi Berra was not playing anymore or coaching or managing or whatever, but he was a historical figure. And, whether it was something he might do or just his passing, he was likely to be someone I would write about again. So that was the first rule, the first reason why I couldn't do a book structured that way. The second one was, as I explained to the publisher, if you really want this book to be honest, we can't have it needing permission from members of Yogi's family. In other words, if I had done the book with them, and then the first draft, they get a copy of it, and they say, "Oh, well, look, he's got dad cursing, as ball players do, right? He's got, there was an opening anecdote about Yogi going out to film a commercial, one of those Aflac commercials, and he was upset because he had to leave training camp. He had to leave spring training, get on a plane to California to shoot this Aflac commercial. And he was storming around, and Guidry picks him up, and he's agitated in the car. And Guidry says, "What's the matter?" He goes, "I got to go out and I got to go sh do a commercial with that damn duck." So somebody in the family might have looked at that and said, "Hey, we've got a contract with these people. We can't be criticizing." But that was, the essence of Yogi, and particularly a window, potentially things that some people within a family, any family, might seem or might deem as embarrassing to the man, like falling. I wrote about when he was on his way to get a haircut and his nails done or something. He was going to Carmen's beautician to get his nails done. I guess he did that from time to time. And he tripped and fell, went down face first in front of his house and was bleeding. And he shows up to the beauty salon, bleeding from cuts on it to his face, and they wanted to rush him to the hospital. And it turned out he was actually injured. He had a slight concussion. But so I couldn't have any family members say, "This has to go and this has to go," because what I promised the family when we sat down to do the book was that whatever's in the book, I guarantee you at the end of it, Yogi will be a more endearing personality in this country than ever, because it will be honest. We all have people we love, whether it's parents or grandparents who are aging, who are failing. It doesn't mean we love them any less. In fact, we may love them, we probably love them more. But there are times that we have to face reality of just, old age. And if we don't present the story as honest as possible, then the book won't be authentic. So that was the one thing that I had to insist on. And so, but you asked me if I would have changed anything. The only regret I had when the book was published was that we didn't have more time, because there were more people out there that I probably could have spoken to. There were more stories. I think anyone who writes a book, and you've written books, so you know this, that you're always left with the feeling that, could I have done, was there even a better way to tell this particular episode if I'd only had more time, or if I only unlocked that one or two more doors? So this is a relatively short book. I can't remember how many pages it is, maybe 220, something like that. I wished I could have had a little more time, but time was of the essence because of Yogi's age, and also because, quite frankly, from a business point of view, they really felt that it needed Yogi and Ron to do a bunch of book signings to generate momentum from the date of publication. So that's really my only regret.
Well, that's I wouldn't worry about it because it's a fine book and it's still reverberates the feelings of, like you say, the friendship and something that's kind of lacking in today's games of me first, me first. We've been talking with Harvey Artan, Driving Mr. Yogi, Yogi Berra, Ron Guidry, and Baseball's Greatest Gift. Harvey, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Absolutely, my pleasure, Ron. Enjoyed it.